White in the backfield with Brady, who takes the snap. There's the rush. Brady goes down. He's sacked by Roby. A huge play by the cornerback, and the Texans D gets off the field.
NFL analysts have been forecasting Tom Brady's decline for years, and every season, he's proven us wrong. But his struggles against Houston didn't come out of nowhere. Could this be it for the 42-year-old quarterback? Then, the Cowboys and Eagles were both upset this week. What will it take to win the worst division in football? I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, December 2nd. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Indeed. Bill, I'm about to say something. I don't want to say it.
Mina.
It's been said many times before.
No, Mina, we're recording this. People are going to be able to hear this.
Bill Barnwell is a senior football writer at ESPN and host of The Bill Barnwell Show. I'm concerned about Tom Brady.
You're actually saying something like that on an audio recording that is going to be saved for perpetuity. That's a very, very, very brave decision on your part.
So, the Patriots lost for the second time this season to Houston, 28-22. Tom Brady was sacked three times, picked once.
On third down and four, Brady gets the snap. He throws back to the left. It's picked off. Roby across the 20, 15, cuts inside 10, and he's down inside the six-yard line.
He struggled to throw it downfield. He held on to the ball a lot longer than usual. Like I said, we have been down this road before for many years now, calling for the end of Brady, and then he usually comes storming back and makes us all look stupid. Could it be real this time?
Just a journalist asking questions. I mean,
just asking questions.
It's absolutely different, I think, from cases in the past. The most recent example, or maybe the most notable example, was 2014, when he struggled for the first month of the year, had an absolutely terrible game against the Chiefs. That was a month. That wasn't a week. It wasn't 2 weeks. It was a month. What I wrote after the game was that I don't know if the Patriots can fix their offensive line. Don't know if the weapons are going to be great. But Tom Brady looked just as good as he did typically, just without the pieces around him. That has not been the case this year. Yes, the offensive line is struggling. Yes, the weapons are mediocre. But this is the worst eight-game stretch we have ever seen from Tom Brady. From week four, from that Bills game forward, Tom Brady ranks 30th in completion percentage, 31st in yards per attempt, and 30th in passer rating. And on top of that, Brady also leads the league in passing attempts over that time frame, which tells you not only that Tom Brady's struggling, but the Patriots have no faith in their running game to pick up the slack and are instead putting the ball on Brady's shoulders over and over and over again, even as he struggles.
Here's the case for Brady. You mentioned that the weapons around him have been lackluster. They've been really bad. And it's not just the weapons around him, right? As you said, the run game has been awful. Before last night, they were 30th in the league in yards per carry. The offensive line has been banged up. There's been injuries across the board. And outside of Julian Edelman, their wide receiver group is incredibly inexperienced, to say nothing of the fact that they don't have Rob Gronkowski, the tight end who a lot of people thought might come back this season. Do you think that all of those factors could explain what we're seeing from Brady?
I mean, yeah, it's absolutely possible. I think certainly the offense around him has been an issue. We saw in this Texans game last night, for example, according to the NFL's Next Gen Stats, Tom Brady held the ball longer on a per-play basis than any other game over the last several years. And that's a testament to not just the Texans defense, but also receivers who were not getting open and didn't have the ability to get open. And I think going back 2 years past, we really underestimated just how important Rob Gronkowski was to this offense, because he was a one-man show as a blocker and as a receiver. So you think back to last year's Super Bowl, where they really struggled on offense for the entirety of the game. The one thing that unlocked the Rams and got them to work was they ran the same play, Haswai Juke, three times in a row with the same personnel. They threw the ball three times in a row with a fullback, James Devlin, two tight ends, Rob Gronkowski and Dwayne Allen, and two wide receivers on the field. That's usually a run personnel grouping, but the Patriots threw the ball three times in a row off of it. All those guys I mentioned are not currently on the Patriots roster, and really have not been replaced.
Brady in the gun from the Ram 31. Shotgun snap. Arches a pass down the near side and over the shoulder. Diving catch at the 5. Gronkowski down to the 2. Falls. He was double teamed down the sideline. It's a pickup of 29. First and goal to go. New England. What a catch by Gronkowski.
I'm glad you mentioned that Super Bowl play, because the narrative coming out of that game, coming out of the Patriots playoff run, Bill, was that the Patriots were playing a different style of football from the rest of the league because they were leaning so heavily on the run. And because they still had, you know, Sony Michel and the offensive line, they could continue to do so going forward. When in reality, as you mentioned, it was Rob Gronkowski who was key to that formula in the final game.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Gronk was such an important player to the Patriots and such a unique player. You know, we saw with the Niners, with George Kittle, who's probably the closest thing to Gronk in the league right now, how much their offense struggled and how much they seemed to not be their usual selves without Kittle in the lineup. And so it really is a, what's the opposite of a virtuous cycle? A vicious cycle?
An invirtuous cycle.
It has become an invirtuous cycle for the Patriots, where because you don't have Gronk, you can't really dictate personnel anymore. You don't have receivers who are going to really scare teams over the top one-on-ones. You can bring a safety into the box. But, I mean, this is an offense where they have been very unpredictable to defenses in years past. And right now, they seem pretty predictable.
One thing that struck me about Brady's performance against the Texans was how much he struggled against pressure, which goes against everything we think about Tom Brady, right? His calling card has always been that he's phenomenal versus the blitz. That's why, you know, whenever the Super Bowl comes around, everyone trots out the same cliche, you have to pressure Brady with 4, but it's a cliche because it's true. And yet, this year, he has struggled against the blitz. He's 27th in QBR. Tonight, they had negative 14 yards when Houston brought extra rushers. Do you think that could also be a source of his problems this season?
Oh, for sure. I think that's part of it because, you know, Tom Brady's never been the most mobile guy. Granted, he did have that one scramble in the game against the Texans where he got up to 16 miles an hour, I think, according to the NFL's next-gen stats. But he's not typically a guy who's going to be able to escape pass pressure. He's going to step up within the pocket. But if it's a free rusher or it's someone who he's not accounting for, he's just going to go down. He's just not going to take the hit. And that's smart. That's not, you know, not a criticism of him in the slightest. But I think this is an offense right now where even in this Texans game, Greg Rosenthal pointed it out on Twitter, so many plays where the ball just goes to nowhere in particular and Brady's just gesturing at a receiver to go to that spot. There's just not a lot of trust and there's not a level of security with Brady. It's hard to think of anyone he really feels comfortable throwing to besides Julian Edelman and James White.
Despite the hand-wringing, the New England Patriots are still 10-2.
So, I mean, even after this loss to the Texans, the Patriots are still in okay shape. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, they have a 31% chance of finishing with the top seed and home field advantage throughout the playoffs in the AFC. The Ravens, who won over the 49ers, are leading with 68%. And then various teams have that final 1%. But the Patriots still have to play the Chiefs on Sunday. By losing to the Ravens and losing to the Texans, they would lose in any potential tiebreaker scenario to either of those teams. So it's going to hurt them. And I think given that Brady is struggling, given how good this defense is, I think it really would benefit them to play at home throughout the postseason as opposed to having to face, you know, the Ravens in Baltimore or perhaps a rematch with this Texans team in Houston.
Well, let's say they get the bye and they play at home. How good does Tom Brady actually have to be for the Patriots to get back to the Super Bowl and win it?
Okay. Even though the Patriots offense is struggling, even though it seems like Tom Brady has taken a step backwards, he's still playing much better than Peyton Manning was during the 2015 season. And Mina, you remember how the 2015 season ended for the Denver Broncos. They were celebrating on a field of confetti, but he was playing much worse during that season and during that playoff run than Tom Brady is playing right now. So even though Tom Brady is not playing his best football, the Patriots are still good enough on defense. And if they can just get enough of a running game going, I think this formula can still win a Super Bowl.
I after the break, let's talk about something I am less afraid of saying is washed: the entire NFC East. The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Bill, nobody wants to win the NFC East.
It's becoming quite a problem.
Wentz steps up and now fires downfield to the end zone. It's intercepted. A crushing blow for Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Absolutely it is.
We should start with the Philadelphia Eagles, who had the more embarrassing, maybe the most embarrassing loss of the weekend, falling 37-31 to the once tanking, no longer tanking apparently, Miami Dolphins. Bill, a lot of people, myself included, thought before this season that the Eagles would win the whole division, right? I mean, they had a quarterback who was coming back from injury, but during his sophomore campaign was playing at MVP level. They had a stacked offensive line. They had purportedly fixed their secondary. They'd added talent at the wide receiver position, but sometimes the best laid plans can go awry. Now, against Miami, I would say the defense was the biggest problem, and we know that this secondary has been full of holes. But what I think is more concerning is the struggles of Carson Wentz, who currently ranks 30th in a statistic you and I like called completion plus minus that NFL's Next Gen Stats puts out. It's the quarterback's completion percentage versus what it should be based on the position of their wide receivers. And beyond that, Bill, he's just sailing throws and missing easy passes. What do you think's happened with him?
What happened to Carson Wentz? There's not one simple factor, right? Like, it's never just one thing that causes a quarterback to be disappointing. And there is obviously the injuries to the wide receiving core. Alshon Jeffrey's been out for part of the year. The running backs have been beset by injuries. The offensive line, which was really the core of this team during that Super Bowl run, has been hit by injuries and aging as well. I've talked a bit about Carson Wentz's splits with and without right tackle Lane Johnson, who didn't play in the Seahawks game, and the Seahawks beat up Carson Wentz in that game. You may have noticed several days later, Lane Johnson got a 4-year contract extension. So certainly, I mean, the Eagles are aware of how important it is for Carson Wentz to have the right infrastructure around him. But I think by this point, especially given how he played during that MVP season in 2017, much like the Rams with Jared Goff, I think they expected Wentz to be the focal point and the most important part of this offense. This was supposed to be his year, and it has not. I mean, he really has struggled, and we've seen it over the last 3 weeks in the Patriots game, in the Seahawks game. That offense just did not do enough to win those games, and games that the defense kept them in. And now this week, we've unfortunately saw the flip side, where the offense played well against one of the worst defenses in football, but then the defense wasn't able to hold up their end of the bargain.
Well, do you think that our expectations for Wentz were too high?
Yeah, I really do in hindsight, because you think about what happened with Carson Wentz in 2017. You look closely at the numbers. He really stands out in ways that it's almost impossible for anybody to keep up over any length of time. He had a passer rating of 123.7 on third downs. To put that in context, the best in the NFL in 2017 by more than 13 points, the 7th best full season mark since 2001. And since then, he has a passer rating on third downs of 91.8. That's 32 points worse. That's pretty dramatic. So he was an absolute superstar when it absolutely mattered most for the Eagles offense in 2017. And since then, he's been kind of ordinary. You know, we sort of had this idea in our head that quarterbacks, you know, sort of steadily improve and peak sometime around 27, 28, 29, and then they slowly sort of decline and fade out. That isn't always the case. Think about someone like Dan Marino, who set incredible passing records his second season in the NFL, and then never really had another season quite at that level again. Was still good for a long time, but was never necessarily that guy who looked like he was going to be the best quarterback in NFL history in year two. So I think there's a lot of ways Carson Wentz could go. And I think with more data, we're seeing that that 2017 season is more likely to be an aberration than kind of be the baseline for what we can expect from Carson Wentz going forward.
And yet, despite Wentz's struggles, they are still very much in it, Bill, because their rival in the NFC East, the Dallas Cowboys, they also lost.
The Cowboys have not beaten a team this year that right now has a winning record.
You know, and today felt like it should be that one, you know, coming into this.
It was a less humiliating loss this week. It was to a good Buffalo Bills team, but they were expected to win. I mean, they had the most efficient offense in the NFL going into that game. What went wrong?
A couple things went wrong. Number one, Josh Allen played great.
Allen gonna run it. Josh has clear sailing over the right side, gets to the 10, inside the 5. He is in. Touchdown, Buffalo. Josh Allen.
Certainly one of the best games he's played as a pro. He was very, very impressive for the Bills on their side of the ball. But this offense, it got stuck at the exact wrong time over and over again.
Snap to Prescott. Looking for Elliott. The pass isn't there. And the Bills were converging anyway, and Buffalo takes over on downs.
As Warren Sharp mentioned on Twitter, the Cowboys went scoreless on 8 consecutive drives in that game, despite getting into Buffalo territory on 6 of those drives. Very rarely do you make it to the other side of the field as many times as the Cowboys did without scoring.
Oh my gosh.
It is intercepted.
Say it isn't so.
Juggled and then picked up by the Bills.
Now, maybe Jason Garrett going for it on 4th and inches, deep in his own territory, threw the Cowboys offense off, and they suddenly did not know what to do with themselves. But I think Thursday was just a combination of great play from Josh Allen, a great Bills defense on the other side of the field, some bad kicking, and some poor execution by an offense that, to your point, has been really good for most of the season, but has really struggled each of the last 2 weeks.
So, do you think the Cowboys are still the favorite to come out of this division?
I mean, favorite is the wrong, not, maybe not the wrong word, but
Let me rephrase that. Are they the least unfavorite to come out of this division?
Yes, they are just by sheer numbers, the prohibitive favorite to win this division. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, they have a 72.1% chance of winning the NFC East. And I do think there are a few reasons to be more optimistic about the Cowboys than perhaps about the Eagles. The Cowboys were 8-2 in games decided by 7 points or less last year. They're 0-4 in those same games. This year, you expect to win about half of those games. I don't think their special teams can get much worse than they've played over the past 2 weeks with the block punt, with Maher missing half of his field goals. And the other defenses in this two-game stretch are really good. They played the Patriots, who are the best defense in football. The Bills were 9th in DVOA. They're going to rise probably to about 6 or 7 after this weekend's numbers go up. And after the Eagles drop off, given how poorly they played against the Dolphins, only one top 10 defense remaining on the Cowboys schedule by DVOA. So I do think we're going to see the offense kind of come back to form over the next few weeks.
So given that Dallas and Philadelphia play on December 22nd, do you think that that game could decide the fate of the NFC East?
I think it does for the Eagles, for sure. Look at the Upshots, cool interactive on the NFL playoffs. They have a 53% chance of making the playoffs if they beat the Cowboys in Philadelphia in week 16, just a 2% chance of making the playoffs if they lose that game. The Cowboys, they can lose that game and still theoretically make their way in. The Upshot has the Cowboys with a 98% chance of making the playoffs if they beat the Eagles in week 16, but still a 48% chance, with all other results being equal, if they do lose that game to the Eagles in Philadelphia. So that game is basically a playoff game for the Eagles, not so much for the Cowboys.
I feel that we should acknowledge that part of the reason the Cowboys and the Eagles are both still in it is that they have the very good fortune of being in a division with the New York Giants and the Washington Redskins. Bill, is this the worst division in the NFL?
Mina, it might be more than the worst division in the NFL. We could be talking about the worst division in NFL history. Jay Stewart, of Football Perspective, looked at the out-of-division records for every division going back to 1970. And the NFC East right now, outside of the division, is 10-26. That is a 278 win percentage. That is the second worst in the history of the National Football League going back to the merger in 1970. Mina, the scariest thing about this is Washington actually still has a chance to win this division. It would take 6 or 7 games over the next 4 weeks going their way, but who would have expected the Eagles to lose this week? And that would have eliminated Washington, and instead Washington won and Philadelphia lost. They are still strangely in the hunt.
Well, Bill, I'd like to revise my earlier statement about the Eagles' loss being the most humiliating thing of the weekend. You telling me the Redskins still have a chance is by far the most humiliating statement I've heard this weekend.
Thanks, Mina.
Thanks, Bill. Coming up, a heartwarming story about college basketball. Let's hope the NCAA doesn't screw it up.
Whatever you want to protect, nobody has more ways to help keep you safe than ADT, the most trusted name in security. You can customize an ADT security package to help protect your home in a way that works for you and your budget. ADT has HD video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats, flood sensors, fire and carbon monoxide detectors, all connected to 24/7 monitoring and controlled by the sound of your voice or the ADT app. So help protect your home today with ADT. Learn more at ADT.com/podcast.
Here's another story I want you to know. Last week, Thanksgiving came early for students and alumni of Stephen F. Austin University when the school's 222nd-ranked basketball team upset Duke, then the number one program, at Cameron Indoor Stadium in Durham. With seconds left in overtime and the game tied up, Duke lost the ball, and a Stephen F. Austin player, Nathan Bain, found himself rumbling up the court on a fast break.
They've got a timeout. They don't use it. Bain! Yes! The Lumberjacks have done it!
It was the first time Duke had lost at home against a non-conference opponent in nearly 2 decades. And for millions of college basketball fans across America, it was cause for schadenfreude. With all due respect to our listeners who root for the Blue Devils, you guys know how everyone feels. But the happiness didn't stop there. Immediately after the game, news spread that the player who made the game-winning layup, Nathan Bain, was from the Bahamas, where his family's home had been hit hard by Hurricane Dorian earlier this year. Back in September, the school had set up a GoFundMe to raise money for his family with a goal of $25,000. Before the Duke game, they'd pulled in about $2,000. As of Sunday afternoon, that figure was up to $142,000. If you look through the donations, you'll see plenty of positive messages from Duke fans, too. Now, it's worth noting here that the school has taken steps to ensure this is all kosher with the NCAA. Per the organization's bylaws, while student-athletes can't make money, schools can raise it for them if they've been hit by extraordinary circumstances, like a natural disaster. By contrast, when ESPN's Jay Williams tried to set up a GoFundMe to raise money for Memphis player James Wiseman after the NCAA fined him for breaking the rules, the organization overruled him. According to reporting in the New York Times, Stephen F. Austin University is safe here, but it isn't clear how the funds can be used or what happens to them if they're in excess of the school's goal, all of which is frankly ridiculous. But while the intrusion of nonsensical bureaucratic hurdles into an otherwise heartwarming story is all too characteristic of the NCAA, it shouldn't detract from the importance of what's happening and what could still happen for Nathan Bain. Immediately after the game, he told reporters that he was playing for his family and that he wanted to make his country proud. Undoubtedly, that has already happened. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.